The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
We welcome you back. It is the second half of the program. It's been a busy one already. Gus Malzahn started it off for us a couple of hours ago. Questions every day here. What's happening at Tennessee now that the staff has seemingly been complete? There are NCAA issues. There are many questions, and who better to talk to than Blake Topmeyer from the News Sentinel. Blake, thank you very much for joining us. It's been a couple of weeks, and I'm hoping things have calmed down on old Rocky Top. How are you?
I'm doing all right. It is a little calmer than the last time we talked. It feels like the off season really is just now finally starting for Tennessee, and of course, spring practice will be right around the corner. But probably be maybe a couple calm weeks in Knoxville, although you always hesitate to say that.
Let's start with the news, and then we'll get to the speculation. The staff has been announced. What is your assessment of what Josh Heupel has done staff-wise?
Well, I think it's a pretty young unit, especially in regards to SEC experience. There's not a ton of it. You know, offensively, it's obviously built in the mold of Josh Heupel's UCF staff and including a couple assistants who were with Heupel dating back to his days as Missouri's offensive coordinator. I think that makes sense. I mean, he runs a pretty specific up-tempo spread offensive system, so he's bringing in guys that have experience running that system. And Josh Heupel doesn't need a ton of help on the offensive side of the ball. This is what he does. This is what he's proven to be successful at. Defensively, he's still got a few spots to fill on that side of the ball, but he did make the key hire early this week in hiring Tim Banks from Penn State as his defensive coordinator. It was an interesting move. I don't think Tim Banks was the first choice on the list. It's someone who doesn't have SEC experience. He has been a defensive coordinator at a couple places, but never anywhere as high profile as Tennessee. And then he has Rodney Gardner, an SEC veteran, coaching the defensive line, the one real SEC veteran on the staff. And I think that was an important hire to get an elder statesman, someone with proven recruiting chops in the SEC and on-field coaching in the SEC, and Rodney Gardner.
And Blake, not only that, if you go back, and I know you have, when Rodney Gardner was at Tennessee the first time around, it was some of the best recruiting years the Vols have had in 25 or 30 years.
That's what I understand, Paul. You know, of course, those were before my days covering the Vols. But I know, in talking with people that Rodney Gardner was instrumental to really the success of that 98 national championship team and some subsequent years by what he did as a recruiter at Tennessee. And of course, you know, he spent so many years on staff there at Georgia, a lot of that time under Mark Richt. And I know he's very well known as a recruiter in the state of Georgia, in the Atlanta metro area, obviously very, very important recruiting ground for Tennessee. And I thought that was a very important hire for Josh Heupel to make. I mean, you know, I don't think it's such a bad thing that he has some guys that maybe don't have a ton of SEC experience, especially because he wants that cohesion on the offensive side of the ball. The guys that know his system, he's not having to teach that to them. They've been working for him for years, and they get that system. They've taught it to players before. But you also need some veteran recruiters, too, some guys with ties to the Southeast. And that's why I thought that hire of Rodney Gardner was so important.
Blake, I'm sure you've gotten this question a few times. What is the status of Kevin Steele?
Well, he's still employed as we speak at the University of Tennessee. I can't imagine that is going to be in the long-term plans. I mean, that's one of the more bizarre subplots to this whole deal is you have Kevin Steele hired by the previous regime, Philip Fulmer and Jeremy Pruitt, less than a week before Pruitt's firing. So there was obviously some sort of plan there for with Jeremy Pruitt to have Steele on staff. And I think for Philip Fulmer, it was really a two-part plan of either Pruitt's retained, and so you have Kevin Steele on staff, so that's really good, or Pruitt's not retained, and you have Kevin Steele being part of the future staff. Well, I think maybe the factor that Philip Fulmer wasn't considering at that point was that he wasn't going to be around as the AD going forward. And so you have a new regime in Danny White and Josh Heupel, and so, sure, the obvious choice for defensive coordinator is right there under their nose all along, and Kevin Steele. And if you want to just go straight experience, straight proven track record, it's really probably hard to find a better qualified defensive coordinator than Kevin Steele. I think there's also something to be said for having the ability to go out and choose your own guy. And obviously Josh Heupel did that and played the field and ultimately wound up with Tim Banks. But I do think the lasting narrative of this defensive coordinator search is that decision to take kind of the proven guy, the guy right in front of you already on staff and Kevin Steele, or to bet on yourself to go out there and hire someone else. And you know, I think at this point, it's obviously too early to tell whether that was a shrewd move and betting on himself to play the field or whether that was sort of short-sighted and he should have just taken the obvious option out in front of him. But I think when we look back on it, you know, a year or two from now, that's what people are still going to be talking about was, did this move of going out, doing a search, ultimately hiring Tim Banks, was that smart or should Josh Heupel have stuck with the in-house option, Kevin Steele? Because now going forward, I can't imagine Kevin Steele is going to remain part of this staff to coach linebackers or something. I think it's just really a formality, a matter of time before Kevin Steele is let go.
Blake, we began the program today talking to Gus Malzahn, who's at UCF, and I'm sure there's probably a faint interest in what happens or has been going on at UCF because of the Danny White and Josh Heupel connection. What's been the reaction in Knoxville to that hire, and was he ever mentioned at all to replace Jeremy Pruitt?
He was mentioned in the fan sphere, I think, in just the media sphere in terms of throwing out candidates that we all thought maybe might be a fit for this job. But no, I don't think Gus Malzahn was someone that was ever really in play for the Tennessee job once it became open and Danny White started conducting that search as athletic director. I certainly think that was an eye-opening hire. I mean, I've heard from a lot of Vols fans that kind of like, whoa, UCF just hired Gus Malzahn. Why didn't Tennessee kick the tires and make a strong run at Gus Malzahn? So I do think, I mean, look, fair or unfair, those comparisons are going to happen. You know, Josh Heupel is going to be put up a little bit against Gus Malzahn and what he does at UCF. And I think that'll reflect on Danny White too. I actually think the UCF job probably was far more appealing than what Tennessee would have been to Gus Malzahn had he, you know, he'd been made a serious offer here. You know, I guess we can debate that, but I think UCF is probably a better fit for him right now. It's a little bit more of a ready-made situation. He can step in, I think, have some top 25 success for a couple seasons, and then bounce back into a Power Five program pretty quickly. I think Tennessee's job was more set up for probably a younger coach who maybe is a little bit more willing to roll the dice on the situation that he inherits here at Tennessee with this ongoing investigation, with the roster situation that Tennessee is in. And I think that's why Tennessee winds up with someone like Josh Heupel and why UCF winds up with someone like Gus Malzahn.
Blake, you mentioned Fulmer and Kevin Steele, and I haven't heard much on Fulmer essentially being pushed out. Do we know any more of the what and the whys of why suddenly he was gone?
Well, I mean, ultimately, Philip Fulmer hired Jeremy Pruitt. He gave Pruitt an extension and a raise before the 2020 season, really doubling down on Pruitt. And then you have this alleged recruiting malfeasance that was happening apparently without the athletic director knowing about it at all. I mean, you know, when Philip Fulmer exited, Tennessee termed it as a retirement. Now he's getting a separation package that is equivalent to what he would have received financially if he was fired. So whether you want to call it a retirement or a firing, I guess, is a matter of semantics when your separation package matches your buyout if you were fired. And Tennessee says that look, you know, Philip Fulmer didn't know anything about these alleged recruiting violations that were going on in Jeremy Pruitt's program. But I think then the question becomes, well, why not? You know, Philip Fulmer from day one said that he was going to be an athletic director first and foremost for the football program, that his focus was going to be getting football back on track. And I can tell you, Philip Fulmer spent a lot of time around that football program. So if he didn't know, you know, it's tough for Tennessee to go out there and say, you know, that these violations were so serious and so many like they did when they fired Jeremy Pruitt. And then to say that that the athletic director had no clue that they were happening, I think, and then say that that athletic director is the person who's fit to lead your department going forward.
Yeah, dereliction of duty is interesting on the I had no idea what was going on, but is there any reason to believe that he knew anything?
Well, I don't think that can be proven, but I think for Philip Fulmer, it wasn't a great scenario either way. I mean, either you didn't know what was going on, and as I think as an athletic director, that's part of your job duties, right? If you're having sweeping violations occurring under your nose that are, you know, Tennessee expects to be level one, level two variety, as an athletic director, maybe you should have known about that a little bit sooner. And then the other alternative is that you did know and didn't do anything about it. And Tennessee stresses that that's not the case, that that when Philip Fulmer did become aware of this, you know, he was handled it on the up and up. So but I don't think it all comes down to the investigation. I think, too, it's that Philip Fulmer was not hired by this chancellor. He was not hired by this system president. They inherited him. They inherited Jeremy Pruitt. They gave it a shot. Philip Fulmer doubled down on Pruitt. He made a big financial investment to this coaching staff, and it didn't work. You know, I mean, Tennessee was 3-7, and when you have an AD whose main reason why he was hired was that he was the former football coach at Tennessee, and who made no bones about it that his top priority was fixing the football program, and then you have a football program that was 16-19 under his watch as athletic director. I think it is kind of a hard sell that should be the guy in charge of your athletic department going forward.
Well said. Blake Topmeyer, thank you. Always good to have you on. We appreciate it.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks, Paul.
Great stuff. Always insightful and gets right to the core. We will take a break. Get your reaction to that and so many other things. A few more guests a little bit later on in the final hour. Right now, we are back to your phone calls at 855-242-7285.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We welcome you back, and it's great to have you here. And we are taking your phone calls at 855-242-7285. And let's check in with Mike, who is in North Carolina. Hey, Mike.
Hey, is this the Paul Bear Feinbaum Show?
Correct. It sure is.
Yeah, you got called out last week by a Missouri fan as a Bama homer. Then yesterday you got called out by an Alabama fan as a Bama homer. So I think we're going to nickname you Bear.
I like it.
Anyway, they're talking about Gus Malzahn going to Tennessee. He would have never considered that. I don't think he was ever even looked at. But number one, I don't think he would ever went to Tennessee because Tennessee suffered from the same problems Auburn does as far as the boosters having way too much influence on the program, in my opinion. And that's why Tennessee's been rebuilding for 10-plus years. What's your take on that situation, with, you know, similar between Auburn's problem and Tennessee's problem?
Well, Mike, I think it's systemic in all of college football that the boosters have too much trouble. So to counter that, you need a strong football coach and an athletic director who can deal with it. And a lot of places have a hard time with that. But I don't think I would blame booster involvement at Tennessee. I would blame making some terrible choices. And, you know, the last time around, they had a coach picked out. I'm not saying Greg Schiano would have been successful or not, but he would have been better than the guy they hired.
Yeah, that may be true, but I wasn't a Greg Schiano fan either.
Let me ask you a question, Mike. Whether you like Greg Schiano or not, would he have left your program in shambles like Jeremy Pruitt did?
Possibly.
Really?
And the reason I say that, not because of Schiano's lack of effort or skills as a football coach. I think the powers above him would have left him in that situation.
Well, but you know, don't go blaming boosters when the fans got Schiano taken off the shelf, and it did a lot more damage than that. You know, when they lost Schiano, they may have lost five or six other coaches because coaches who were being considered took a look at how that went down, and they all said, "I don't want to be part of that program." And I think a lot of them said the same thing this time around. So blame boosters if you want, but there's a lot more that went into the last coaching search than one or two boosters making noise. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. How about Luke in Florida? You're on the air. Hey, Luke.
Hey, Paul. How are you today?
I am well. Thank you.
Good. I'm a 1965 graduate at the University of Florida and been a lifelong Gator fan. I just wanted to make a comment about Dan Mullen being a little bit reluctant to commit himself one way or another long term to Florida. And I think this is a result of the NIL talk. And overzealous boosters are going to make it tough on coaches to be able to coach in college ranks. And I think even the GOAT, Coach Saban, may have a problem when those young men are 19, 20 years old and get paid by outside influences. They've been told since they were freshmen in high school, you're a five-star athlete and you're going to be the greatest thing that's ever came out of this town and be the greatest thing for whoever you sign with. And it's going to make it tougher to coach. And him asking, Coach Mullen asking, you know, about whether or not this whole thing is going to change and what the future holds is a very valid comment.
Well, it is true. And the game is changing, but that's why these guys, make so much money. They're paid to deal with the issues. This is not the way it used to be when you were at UF, when, the coach had total authority. You have to deal with a lot of outside influences now But Dan Mullen's used to it. He isn't a novice at this. I think there's more. There's just something about that story down there that I can't wrap my arms around. I don't know why I just have a hard time believing that Dan Mullen is suddenly wants to distance himself from college football.
I'm not sure that the comments that I've heard, and of course I'm from Polk County, which is one of the centers of Gator football in the state. And we don't have a major newspaper here. And when you're talking to people in Tampa or people in Orlando, obviously they're influenced by the USF and the UCF talk, and they all want to see something, negative about the Gators. But, I think Mullen has a point. And being reluctant to say, I love the Gators, I'm going to stay here forever. He doesn't have a lifetime contract, and he knows how fickle same.
Yeah, but Luke, I can assure you, contracts in college football mean nothing. And, you know, all you're really talking about is how much will it cost to fire me?
Well, sure, and I understand that. And, you know, if some professional team, because he's never been there, if some professional team comes around and throws huge, huge bucks at him, guaranteed contract.
Sure. There's a lot of money in pro football.
For 8 years, that'll change the whole.
Oh, no, I agree with you on that. And that goes for any business. Security and money make a lot of people make very poor decisions that they usually regret. Thank you for the call. I do appreciate it very much. And let's check in next with who we got here. How about Fletch? Good movie. Fletch is up next. Hey, Fletch.
Hey, how are you doing, Paul?
We are doing great.
I got a couple of things. Hopefully I can get them in before we get a break.
Sure.
If Mullen goes pro, gets fired, or finishes his 2 years, and Georgia is dumb enough to fire Kirby Smart, I'd be happy to have him as a coach.
Well, Fletch, I can tell you, Georgia is not going to replace Kirby Smart.
Yeah, I know. It's ridiculous for some of these fans from Georgia to think that they want to move on to do something better.
I mean, I frankly, if you move Saban off of the chart, which there's no reason to debate Nick Saban, I don't think there's a coach in the SEC who is more secure than Kirby Smart.
I don't disagree with that. Real quick, somebody called the other day. I don't have their name. They were critical of Mike White,
right?
Our basketball coach. I think they watched one or two games. I think he makes adjustments very well. Everybody has a lot of transfers since the portals opened up in the last 5 years. So it's not just our team that has transfers. We even have players coming to our team that got transferred, like the Colston kid. He's awesome. Came from Michigan, didn't get any minutes, so he transferred to us. Because Keonta Johnson's out, he's our best player.
No, I agree. I think from a pure basketball standpoint, Mike White's one of the best coaches in the SEC. Hey, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. We are going to continue with more of your phone calls, and we hope you'll give us a ring at 855-242-7285. A couple of Gator legends at the top of the next hour. We are coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we welcome you back. Great to have all of you here, and more guests to come in the final hour on a Wednesday afternoon. And let's check in with Heath, who is in Arkansas. Good afternoon, Heath.
Hey, Paul, how are you?
We are doing great. Thank you.
Hey, I just want to ask you a quick question about Eric Musselman. Now, I know Nate Oates has a great program there down in Alabama, but does Eric Musselman have any shot at SEC Coach of the Year?
Yes, and I think some of it depends on how it ends. I think right now Nate Oates is probably the prohibitive favorite, but Alabama was projected fifth or sixth in the league. Where was Arkansas projected? Do you remember? Certainly no higher than that.
I would say eight or nine, maybe.
And I think sometimes that helps dictate, but I would say – yeah, unless Ole Miss makes an incredible run, which they may do, I would say it's between those two. But Nate Oates would have the edge right now.
Awesome. Thanks, Paul. I'll hang up and listen.
I will tell you, not by much, though. I think Musselman's had a phenomenal year. Thank you for the call. Let's check in with Dennis, who is in Missouri. Hello, Dennis.
Hey, Paul. I just turned into the program late today After my nap, and I caught a tail end of your conversation about some problems with current programs, and you mentioned Missouri, and I just wonder if I'd missed anything. I know the basketball program is kind of on a downtrend right now, but can tell me what you were talking about, the problem.
Yeah, no, Dennis, I don't know. I'm not accusing you of you being fuzzy coming out of your nap, but I don't remember specifically saying that. You may have heard a clip that we we've had on during the breaks, talking about Missouri's basketball team being roller coaster. Pat Forty was here yesterday, and in Missouri, I mean, they blew another game last night, but they're still in contention. But but overall, though, I don't have any. I tell you what it may have been. I was speaking about the NCAA and cooperating with the NCAA, and Missouri did that a couple of years ago, and they got no credit for it at all.
Okay, that fits.
I think that's what I was referring to. But as far as I'm concerned, everything seems to be working pretty well in Columbia.
Yeah, no serious problems. Well, thanks for the update. I'll go back to my nap.
When did you go to Missouri, Dennis?
About 100 years ago.
What year did you? I know I'm asking your age here, but what year did you graduate?
I got a bachelor's in 53.
53.
And I served in the Army, and then served in the Army 2 years. And then I came back and got a master's in from 55 to 57. And I love Missouri. I've told you this before. That was the best years of my life. I met my wife there. We've been married 67 years. And I still talk to Missouri, old Missouri friends on the phone. And Don Furrow, remember, he was a
coach. Sure.
I still talk to his son-in-law. And he fills me in on what's going on in Columbia. And I love sports. I really like your program. I think it's very insightful. I pick up a lot of things that a person ordinarily wouldn't pick up on, you know. And, so I appreciate you, Paul.
Well, Dennis, I appreciate you saying that, and you continue to stay well. You're still a young man.
Well, I'm young at heart. You know, God's been good to me, and
I'm curious. I've never asked anyone. You're 90, right?
Yep.
I mean, age is relative, and every cornerstone, whether it's 30, 40, 50, 60, whatever, you know, people look at it. I mean, I know you, do you look at a certain age and go, do you want to be 100? Is that something that you don't really think about?
I don't think much about it. I've been told people are surprised at my age because I look pretty healthy. Like I tell people, I'm in pretty good shape for the shape I'm in.
That is a remarkable. You sound great. Obviously, I'm not seeing you right now, but we tend to think of 90 as being pretty old. But you're giving me something to shoot for.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, I got a lot of exercise. I'm a geologist, and I lived at 5,000 feet. I lived in Nevada 25 years. My wife and I raised four boys. They were all athletes, and it was a great place to live. And at 5,000 feet, and then I worked and walked at 6, 8, 9,000 feet, and I hunted a lot. I'd walk 5 or 6 miles at 5 or 6, 7,000 feet.
What did you hunt at that altitude?
Hungarian partridge, chukar partridge. The chukars were imported from the Middle East, India, years ago, and they really thrive in a similar ecological situation. And, I've raised dogs. I had labs and Brittany Spaniels. And then I'd travel with my buddies and go to North Dakota and shoot pheasants. Or I'd go up to Idaho and shoot pheasants. Well, I'm talking too much about
no,
myself.
No, I am thoroughly entertained by this. I appreciate you sharing that.
Well, like I said, the highlight of my life was meeting my wife and living in Missouri. And I played basketball in high school for the Jefferson City Jays. Jeff City's the capital.
Sure, sure.
And we won 23 and lost 6 my senior year. And, but I was raised down close to your home. Okay, I was raised down at Papa Bluff, Missouri.
Oh, wow.
You know what? Yeah, and Memphis was that. What clinic? Is that the Campbell Clinic down there that's famous?
Yeah, the famous medical clinic, the Campbell Clinic. That used to be one of the leading sports orthopedic people in the country.
Well, the reason I know that, we played Sykeston, Missouri, in football in Papa Bluff, and we had 3 boys seriously hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Sykeston had some big, tough dudes, my best friend was laid up, and they shipped him down to the Campbell Clinic.
Yeah, no, it was. I can't remember the guy's name, but he was. There are a lot of them now, but he was one of the one of the pioneers in sports medicine.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've moved west 50 years ago, and I read the. Who was the guy that said, "Go west, young man"? Horace Greeley. Yeah.
Pretty famous guy there.
But it's been a great experience being west. It really has. And, you know, lots of recreation. I played golf at Sun Valley, golf at Tahoe, and just lived a good life, too, you know. And I just thank the Lord for taking care of me.
Well, Dennis, thank you.
As I said, I'm redundant, but I appreciate your program.
No, well, you're an inspiration to a lot of us, and you be well, and I look forward to chatting again very soon. Thank you, Dennis.
You bet. Take care. Bye.
Great to have you. It really is. Whenever you're kind of down, think about what he has done and the life he has lived. We will take a break. More to come as we continue here on a Wednesday afternoon.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we welcome you back on a Wednesday afternoon. Let's get back to the calls. And Larry is up next. Hey, Larry, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
Larry, I'm doing great. How about you?
Just fine. I've got 2 things I need to say, and you tell me what you think.
Okay.
Dan Mullen embarrassed the SEC twice at least last year. And Gus Malzahn seems like he's happy as ever been. I seen him smile today.
He did look happy.
Yeah, he did. He looked like the world was left off of his shoulders.
You know, that can happen when you get away from people that don't appreciate you.
That's what I thought.
No, I thought he looked incredibly happy today, and you know, I don't remember him looking happy over the last 4 or 5 years at Auburn. He felt like he had the world on his shoulders, which he did.
I think he did too, but I hope him the best down there. I'm an Alabama fan, but I like Gus Malzahn. He seemed like a good guy.
I agree with you, and I think he's a good person. And you know, he's not a dynamo, and he's overcome that with sincerity and authenticity. And I don't think the people at Auburn appreciated him. And it will be very interesting to see what the next chapter is down there. But one thing about Malzahn, you knew you had a good program. You may not have always, you know, there was a clunker along the way usually, but. He won a lot of big games. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Let's continue with Dennis, who is up next. Hey, Dennis, you're on the air.
I wanted to relate to you, Paul, about Johnny Majors and his brothers and his dad. Shirley Majors, which coached at Swanee College, he coached 5 sons in high school, and all of them went and played college football. Johnny Majors played tailback at UT. Joe Majors played quarterback at Florida State.
Right.
Then he played tailback at UT. Bobby played safety, and Larry's youngest brother played for his dad at 20.
Yeah, no, I will tell you this, Dennis, when I was in school there and John Majors was coming back to Tennessee, I called Coach Shirley Majors one night at his house and interviewed him, and he could not have been nicer. I met him a couple of times when Coach Majors finally came down from Pittsburgh, and you know, a man who really never got probably enough credit for being a phenomenal football coach. And you're right about what he produced there. And there's still people that are sad. I think it was Bill Majors, wasn't it, who died in that crash in Tennessee. The unfulfilled promise of that young man. And it's a great family, though. And I appreciate you mentioning that. Thank you very much. Let's continue with Mac, who is in Maryland. Hey, Mac.
How you doing, Paul? I heard Mike White was a subject of topic, and I have a lot of opinions, so I just thought I'd call in.
Sure.
I hate to be negative and have these bad opinions, you know, as a Gator fan, it's in all kinds of weather, but just sitting through these past 6 years with Mike White, it really is painful to think about the future of the program. You know, set aside the game scores, the X's and O's, all of that. The most important thing about a college coach is how is he as a leader of young men. Looking at Mike White's recruiting classes starting at 2017, his first real class when he was able to, you know, spend the time and recruit the kids, it was a top 20 nationally ranked class. Not a single person who signed to Florida from that class got to their junior year at Florida. They all transferred. Now, if we go to 2018 class, we start seeing more of the same thing where Andrew Nembhard had to transfer. You know, the tragedy with Keontae is not Mike White's fault at all. And then we have Noah Locke. Every year, I like to call it Black Tuesday. It's after we lose in the round of the 32, Mike White has one-on-one meetings with every player on the team. And he tells three or four guys, hey, you're not going to play anymore. We got, you know, either it's a transfer coming in and I'm going to sell out to this transfer, whether it be Igor Kulichov or Kerry Blackshear, or this year with Colin Castleton. Now, Colin's been playing well. I got to give him credit. He is putting up stat lines. But what does bringing in Colin do to a player like Omar Payne, who was, you know, a huge piece of a recruiting class that was supposed to build the future of Florida? And after a freshman year where Mike White described Omar as the hardest working freshman and the most polished freshman, after a season like that, he just brings in some guy off the street who didn't play any minutes for a very good Big Ten team and just gives this new guy Omar Payne's starting spot. If I was Omar, I'd transfer, and I love Omar. I would love to see him in the orange and blue for as long as possible. But what kind of leader of young men is Mike White being? What kind of relationships are he building with every year three or four players are leaving his program? If I'm a recruit, why would I want to go there? He hasn't been able to develop anybody. Scotty Lewis was supposed to be a top 10 pick. Now it's not even looking like he's going to get drafted. And, you know, obviously that's someone, Scotty Lewis, maybe he hasn't taken to the coaching well. Maybe he doesn't work as hard as he should be. Or maybe he was just poorly scouted out of high school. But there's not a single flaw. Andrew Nembhard said, you know what, I could be the starter on a top three SEC team. But no, I'd rather back up an 18-year-old at Gonzaga. I feel like that gives me a better shot at my future.
Mac, I hate to interrupt you, but we are out of time. I appreciate your thoughts. And we will head to the final hour. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285.